column of harsh, bright light streamed through the shadowy space.
All right, then, barked a Zerka staffer. Everybody out! We'll sort through the lot of you!
Since Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were closest to the airlock, the staffer turned to them first.
Don't recognize that, get up! Slave or free?
Free, Qui-Gon said in his deep rumble. Free Jedi, as a matter of fact. Summoned to Pyjol by the Lord Regent.
The Zerka staffer straightened up so quickly, he whacked his head on the airlock rim. Obi-Wan saw a few of the enslaved people stifling laughter.
Sir! Yes, of course. The Lord Regent is on board.
We'll take you to him immediately.
Say that everyone here is checked out by a medical droid,
Qui-Gon said.
The plasma fire could have caused unseen lung damage.
Sir, absolutely, sir, right away.
After Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan had shed their spacesuits and stood in simple gray lining suits, a silvery protocol droid led them through the corridors of the Zerka vessel. Every control panel signaled that this ship had the finest equipment. Every surface gleamed. The feel of the place was both very efficient and very cold. It was not the sort of place where Obi-Wan could feel comfortable wearing a thin, skin-tight lining suit. To distract himself, he said to Qui-Gon, "What lung damage could the passengers have suffered from the plasma fire? None of the fumes got inside, surely?"
There's no damage they could have suffered.
Qui-Gon gave him a sly look.
But a medical checkup ensures the enslaved get some time to pull themselves together afterward, before being put back to work.
Of course.
That was another thing Obi-Wan had always respected about Qui-Gon. His compassion. Obi-Wan wasn't uncaring, at least he hoped not, but sometimes it took him longer to see when someone was hurting, or what they might truly need. Qui-Gon seemed to instinctively understand such things.
So I don't suppose he could have taught me that anyway, Obi-Wan told himself.
That was a quality he'd have to cultivate on his own. The protocol droid led them through a gilded arch, more ornamented than anything else Obi-Wan had yet seen on board. When the doors slid open, they revealed a luxurious space, an observation deck furnished with long couches and rich fabrics. The most beautiful flowering plants of a dozen worlds bloomed from exquisite ceramic pots. A faint whiff of incense softened the air as a Syrian band played a lilting ballad. Seated in the plushest chair in the center of the room was a man drinking Tonnerre wine from a fine crystal goblet and wearing rags, basically. Clothing so threadbare, it hardly deserved the name. His dirty boots were propped on another chair and had already marred the velvet. The man's unshaven face widened in a grin as he spotted his visitors.
A Zerka official, I guess, Obi-Wan thought. But I wouldn't have thought a corporate officer would be so casual, so extravagant.
Rael Averroes,
Qui-Gon said to this man, who couldn't possibly be a Jedi, but was.
Good to see you again.
Chapter 10.
Qui-Gon smiled before he could stop himself. Whatever else had happened, however much they might have changed, this was still Rael. He hadn't realized how much the reunion would move him, not until now, when he finally stood face to face with Rael again.
Qui-Gon Jinn,
Rael called, holding his hands out wide as he strode forward. His old brown robe had been lined with pale blue shimmer silk in the Pajali fashion, though, over time, it had of course been worn as threadbare as most of Rael's garments.
It's been too long, kid.
Agreed.
Qui-Gon allowed a welcoming embrace before stepping back to take a better look.
I think the palace life agrees with you.
Rael laughed.
It tends to agree with most people. I mean, what's not to like? Now let me guess, this is your Padawan, right? Can't believe they trusted you with one. The Order's really going downhill.
The grin turned wolfish.
Their decline started around the time they accepted me. Not a coincidence.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, Rael Averroes, Qui-Gon said, gesturing between them.
Obi-Wan made a polite short bow. His student could be difficult to read at times, but overall, he looked as bewildered by Rael as virtually everyone else was at first. Rael Averroes wasn't a tall man. He barely came up to Qui-Gon's shoulder. Time had swirled Rael's thick black hair with a few touches of gray, but that only set off the deep tan of his skin and the strong features of his face. Rael's frame remained muscled and strong despite his increasing years. None of that was as striking as the warmth, the charisma, that still shone from Rael like a light. And obviously, he cared no more for conformity now than he ever had.
"I tease you about your version of royal robes," Qui-Gon said, "but in my current state, I can hardly comment on anyone else's clothes." "At least I've got clothes."
Rael's dark eyes sparkled with humor as he took a pointed look at their lining suits.
"As much fun as it would be to have you show up on Pygel in your underwear, I wouldn't do that to Fanry." "You're there. Katie, isn't it?"
A young girl cleaning in the corner hurried forward and ducked a quick bow.
"Yes, Lord Regent."
"Head to ship stores, will you? Basic tunics and trousers will do for now. We'll have their stuff sent from the Corellian cruiser to the palace."
Rael dismissed the girl with a quick wave. Qui-Gon studied Katie as she hurried out. Probably a year or two younger than Obi-Wan, but already doing adult work. Dark hair tied back with plain cloth. A royal emblem on her gray coveralls. The telltale rectangular shape on the back of her hand.
"That's Stun out there with the soulcraft,"
Rael said as he led them both to the nearest of the sofas.
"That was worth watching. I mean, it doesn't measure up to what we managed on Ryosa that time, but still, not bad.
We'd need an entire squadron to be in danger to equal our adventure on Ryosa."
Qui-Gon saw Obi-Wan's interest had been piqued. Maybe he should share a few more of his old war stories. Adult Jedi might know how little war was worth, but the young were always fascinated, despite themselves.
"Dooku would be proud."
Rael's smile faded slightly. Qui-Gon always remembered Rael smiling, but somehow he seemed more himself now with that touch of melancholy.
"Heard he left the Order. Can you believe it? I tried to reach him on Sereno, but no luck."
Qui-Gon was taken aback.
"He didn't answer you."
With a shrug, Rael said,
"Ah, he's a ruler now. Probably surrounded by courtiers and bureaucracy and all the other bantha poodoo I've had to deal with here for the past 8 years. Bet you one of his new flunkies tossed my message out with the rest of the trash people sent to Count of Sereno. Sounds like he talked to you, though."
"No, I haven't reached out to him at all."
Qui-Gon sighed heavily.
"I think he left partly for Sereno's sake, after inheriting the title of Count, but partly because he no longer agrees with the work of the Jedi. It's an argument I'm not ready to have."
Rael gave him a knowing look.
"An argument you don't want to lose, you mean? You've always been a rebel, Qui-Gon. If Dooku talked to you long enough, you'd probably walk out the door right after him."
"Not anymore," Obi-Wan ventured. "I mean, Master Jin isn't a rebel, not really. He can't be, now that he's joining the Jedi Council." Qui-Gon wanted to wince, though it was hard to say why. Rael's eyes widened as he sank back on the cushions in astonishment that didn't seem to be exaggerated.
"Is he joking? Or did the Jedi Council get more interesting all of a sudden?"
"Obi-Wan isn't joking. As for the Council, well, they finally seem open to hearing other points of view."
Qui-Gon shook his head in disbelief. "My surprise is even greater than yours."
"We've gotta reach out to Dooku again," Rael said with a laugh. "If he hears the news on his own, unprepared, he's gonna drop dead on the spot. A planet will lose its ruler. So galactic politics hangs in the balance, right?"
Obi-Wan laughed too. Rael's charm had settled around the room like velvet, soft and warm, muffling any discomfort, any sound. But a vague sense of uneasiness remained within Qui-Gon, and would, until he had a chance to talk with Rael alone. Once the Padawan had left to watch the pilots bring them in for a landing, Avaros could speak freely. Maybe now he could get Qui-Gon to loosen up.
You grew at least 7 centimeters taller than me. More, I think. How dare you?
Avaros shook his head in mock dismay.
I spent 10 years with Dooku towering over me. Then you came along and I finally had someone to tower over. Now I'm out of luck. I didn't do it on purpose,
Qui-Gon said. He seemed amused but didn't laugh. Even as a little kid, he'd never been the type to joke around freely. Avaros had at first wondered if the boy was troubled in some way Dooku hadn't caught on to. Yeah, Dooku was a good man, but he was tall and dark and imposing and strict. Avaros would bet the last time his old master laughed, the stars hadn't even cooled yet. That made him an imposing figure, especially to a kid. That wasn't the sort of person a boy would relax around, or tell all his secrets to. But Avaros had come to understand that Qui-Gon had a kind of natural bedrock steadiness, that it was as much a part of him as his flesh and bones. You weren't going to find him in the extremes. Which was where Avaros preferred to spend most of his time. Still, he and Qui-Gon understood each other. Avaros felt sure their bond endured.
We should discuss the opposition and their leader, Halen Nazaka,
Qui-Gon said.
Performance artist terrorists. Now I've finally seen everything.
Avaros held up a hand.
Don't say that until you've been to a bachelorette party in Kashyyyk. Wait, you weren't really. Maybe someday you'll find out. Not now.
Avaros grinned.
And let's hold off on the debrief until Fanry can be a part of it, too. She's got to start handling this stuff on her own soon.
Qui-Gon nodded.
Very wise.
Okay, he wasn't being unfriendly, but he was distant. What the hell was wrong with Qui-Gon?
It's about Nim. That's not about Nim. Qui-Gon would understand more than anyone. He doesn't blame me.
For an instant, Avaros could see Nim's face as he'd seen it last. Her wide eyes shadowed by the haze of the slicer dart, tears welling.
Move on. Like I said, you'll be able to get through to Dooku now.
Avaros said as he strolled by the long viewport of the observation deck, with Pygel bright and blue against the darkness of space.
I wish I could be as certain.
Qui-Gon shook his head.
Yoda's concerned about Dooku's departure from the Order. He thinks there may be more to it than anyone knows.
Avaros shrugged.
That guy's concerned about all kinds of ridiculous stuff.
He shifted his voice into an imitation of Yoda's.
Up the hell he should shut!
Qui-Gon tried not to laugh, but failed, which only made Avaros grin wider.
Seriously, this? It's the bait of the century! When you tell Dooku you've been invited onto the Jedi Council, he'll want to spill on what it's really like.
Do you think I should be cautious? Qui-Gon held his glass of Tonnerrae, but had yet to take a sip.
But I ought to hear Dooku out before I make a decision. What decision? Come on! Are you seriously considering not joining the Council?
Qui-Gon shrugged. I intend to accept. But I know that accepting means change. For me, the Council, even for Obi-Wan, it's not something to undertake lightly.
Responsibility can be heavy,
Avaros admitted.
My work here in Pygel isn't nearly as big a deal as serving on the Council, and still, sometimes it feels, let's say, daunting.
This earned him a sharp look.
It doesn't seem that daunting from here.
Avaros turned around, as if only just noticing his old robes.
What, you think I ought to be swanning around in shimmer silk and satin? Wearing shiny metal, something like that?
As though you would ever. I was referring to your comfort with Zerka Corporation, Qui-Gon said, gesturing toward the luxurious interior of the observation deck.
Certainly they seem comfortable with you.
Avarosh shook his head rudely.
Listen, there's a time for straightforward negotiations, and then there's a time to play the game. I'm playing the game with Zerka because they can help Fanry.
They can help the whole planet if I handle it right. Finally, Qui-Gon relaxed.
I too often use less direct methods, shall we say.
Yeah, I know. Or were you hoping I'd forgotten Ryosa?
I wish I could forget Ryosa.
Finally, Qui-Gon drank some wine, relaxing into the moment. Avarosh was relieved. Now they could enjoy themselves, at least until the time came to handle the opposition.
Man, that makes me think. You remember the old prophecies?
He asked as he poured himself more wine. Qui-Gon stared at him in surprise.
Of course. Actually, I've begun studying them again the past couple of years.
Why?
They'd both studied them under Dooku, who considered them an important element of Jedi history. Avarosh had found them an entertaining curiosity, but he remembered Qui-Gon being enchanted by them and worried about them to a degree he'd never understood.
It occurred to me that I'd have a greater understanding of the prophecies when I had a greater understanding of myself,
Qui-Gon said.
But why do you ask?
Because wasn't there one?
Avarosh snapped his fingers.
It went... One will ascend to the highest of the Jedi despite the foreboding of those who would serve with him. That was it, right?
Roughly.
Qui-Gon shook his head.
You think that prophecy refers to me?
Are the Council's wary of me?
Hey, they were, right?
Avarosh said.
But obviously they got over it.
The prophecies aren't to be taken literally.
That's what I always said. Don't you remember it was me who had to talk you out of it back in the day? You were halfway to becoming a spaceport soothsayer, offering to see futures for a credit or two. Still, it's weird, right? You being obsessed with this stuff as a teenager, and then nearly living out one of the prophecies yourself?
I suppose it is strange, Qui-Gon said.
And then some,
Avarosh agreed. His friend seemed distracted again, but this time he could tell Qui-Gon's thoughts had nothing to do with Avarosh, and so could be safely ignored.
Chapter 11.
From the leverage, both the Soul Craft and the Jedi were loaded onto a smaller cargo vessel that could land more easily on the planet's surface. As they approached the capital city, the cargo ship skimmed above lanes of tall, thin conifers that striped the rugged hills below. Sunset light shone on a broad ocean as the ship rounded toward its coast. Giant cliffs jutted out into the water, their white stone imposing itself on the seascape. Qui-Gon stepped to Obi-Wan's side as the ship began its final approach.
Have you learned to pilot yet another type of ship? You'll be able to fly anything in the galaxy before long.
However, Obi-Wan's attention was elsewhere.
Master, the capital city's nearby, but we're still in a wilderness. The readouts say we're practically on top of the royal palace when there's nothing around for kilometers.
Qui-Gon chuckled.
Look closer.
He watched Obi-Wan's eyes widen as he realized that the cliffs had been hollowed out. Windows in various geometrical shapes had been hewn from the rock, and the sunset already revealed that the transparencies there were in various colors. What lay before them was not only the palace, but an entire royal complex. The only hints above the surface were the round temple known as the Celestial Chalice, and ground so thickly forested with trees that it was easy to miss the manicured lawns and antique iron fences.
By night, the palace complex shines like a lantern,
Qui-Gon said.
It's remarkable. Why did they do it? Protection from the solar flares?
Qui-Gon shook his head.
No. Pyjali culture believes in focusing on the internal rather than the external.
Admirable,
Obi-Wan said.
Not to mention unusual in a royal court.
Very true.
Qui-Gon couldn't suppress a smile as he thought of some of the regal pomp they'd been forced to endure in the past. As they walked down the gangway, the hiss of steam around them, an honor guard of troops marched in their direction. Their cloaks were plain brown, the cloth visibly rough, but as the guards walked, the flutter of the robes revealed brilliant green shimmer silk linings. The guards stopped and pivoted to face one another across a path of smooth stone that led toward a high arched door. As they did so, Rael emerged from within the ship, ready to escort them the rest of the way.
So here we are,
he said, stepping in front of them on the path and gesturing ahead. A strange kind of happiness shone from him, one it took Qui-Gon a moment to recognize as pride.
Ahem! Allow me to present Her Serene Highness, Crown Princess Fanry of Pyjal.
Emerging from the arched palace door was a young girl with pale skin. Her dress and turban scarf were plain white, but with slashes in the sleeves and skirt that revealed the rich gold shimmer silk of her undergown.
We are most honored to welcome more Jedi Knights to our realm,
Fanry said, coolly and properly, then made a face.
I'm supposed to refer to myself in the plural when I'm speaking officially. No idea why. Makes me want to turn around and look for my clone.
That made Qui-Gon chuckle, and Obi-Wan grinned too. Obi-Wan said,
When you're crowned queen, can you change that? I won't be absolute ruler, so no.
Fanry gave an exaggerated sigh, clearly meant to amuse.
But maybe the new assembly will have mercy and enact the changes on my behalf. I mean, our behalf.
Clever, Qui-Gon thought. Quick, very independent. Exactly the sort of student Rael should have. Not like Nim.
Nim had died at very nearly the same age Fanry was now. During his time as a Padawan, Obi-Wan had visited dozens of royal palaces, from a chief's simple fortress on Lamu to the expansive, spectacular Queen's Complex on Alderaan. He thought of himself as too worldly to be awed by such places, or even surprised. However, the inside-out aesthetic on Pyjal impressed him. Every table was gilded below rather than above. Every chair was plain, save for the richly embroidered cushions that would be hidden when someone sat. Even the lanterns that hung from the high ceilings were fashioned from plain black metal, but lined with glittery tile that reflected sparkles of light all around. There was something fascinating, Obi-Wan decided, about the idea of having such grandeur and concealing it, making it known only to those who would be willing to discover what lay within.
You're getting to like the place,
Avaros said, striding past Obi-Wan on his long legs.
Knew you would. Best palace in the galaxy, if you ask me.
Of course you like it best,
Qui-Gon interjected. He remained a few steps behind them, not bothering to keep up with Avaros.
This has been your home for nearly a decade. Only natural that you should become fond of it.
That wasn't the same thing as Qui-Gon saying he didn't like the palace. He'd even praised it before. But Obi-Wan sensed his master was blunting Avaros's pride, refusing to get caught up in his point of view.
I suppose I should be glad Qui-Gon's not overly impressed with a master who was responsible for killing his Padawan,
Obi-Wan thought. The bleak joke cut too close for him to smile. They reached the central chamber, where Fanry hurried ahead and took her place on her throne. Obi-Wan noted with amusement that her slippered feet didn't quite touch the floor. She gestured to the courtiers and guards who stood around her.
Our Jedi guests have arrived,
she proclaimed, lifting her chin.
This is Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn and his Padawan, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Present yourselves to them for introductions.
A tall, skinny woman with wiry graying curls piled atop her head tottered forward in her narrow cut brown dress, pale lips set in a thin line.
I am Minister Orth.
Her imperious tone suggested she expected them to have heard of her.
I advise Her Serene Highness, and of course our Lord Regent, on internal planetary matters.
There was no of course about it.
Obi-Wan felt sure most political figures wouldn't trip over the title of an important official they'd been reporting to for nearly a decade.
She resents Avaros, he noted. Maybe it didn't matter for their mission, but he was going to mention it to Qui-Gon, if only so his master would know Obi-Wan had been sharp enough to pick it up. Another introduction also struck him. That of the captain of Fanry's guard, a slender man with dark skin, strikingly high cheekbones, and a gleaming bald head.
I am Captain Deren, he said in a voice so low and resonant that he made Qui-Gon sound like a youngling. My loyalty is sworn to the princess now and forever.
It was a formal phrase any guard might have uttered, but Obi-Wan could sense how deeply Deren meant it.
Were these guys help?
We're finally gonna put the opposition where they belong. In jail.
Avaros took his place on the dais beside Fanry, standing to her right, slightly behind her shoulder. Undoubtedly, this was meant to suggest his deference to her. But his ragged appearance and unshaven face suggested Rael Avaros deferred to no one.
Has he become too accustomed to power? Obi-Wan wondered. No Jedi should ever fall into that trap. He doesn't seem as though he cares for authority that much. But he definitely likes the fact that no one can boss him around.
The glint in Minister Orth's narrowed eye suggested she'd like to give Avaros an order or two.
Qui-Gon asked, How much can you tell us about the opposition? They were actors of a sort before they turned to terrorism.
Fanry held out her hands as if helpless. Performance artists, whatever those are. Orth interjected,
Halen Azaka had this one show where she wore this enormous white fluffy thing about 4 meters across and invited audience members to cut off bits of it to be clouds in the sky she was painting. Apparently this counts as art.
It was about the paradox of finding serenity through destruction, huffed Avaros. Think about it.
Minister Orth looked like she'd sooner lick a river toad.
Probably Avaros's enthusiasm for performance art was mostly about irritating Orth.
Then again, Obi-Wan had once heard of a hut who collected fine porcelains. You never could tell what people held inside. Fanry continued as though neither her regent nor her minister had spoken.
Our royal audiences are available to everyone. We've repeatedly asked to meet with this Halen Azaka or other opposition leaders, under a promise of absolute immunity. But no one appears. No one speaks. Instead, we got pranks and stunts and then vicious attacks.
The hollow screen nearby showed a statue breaking apart to reveal tiny shimmering flight droids, which spelled out various words in the air, and then an explosion ripping through a Zerka warehouse. The contrast was even more jarring than Obi-Wan had expected.
Terrorists are always looking for reasons to hurt other people, Avaros said. They don't like the treaty. Yeah, they give all these different reasons why, none of which justifies the things they've done. Even though the moon is finally getting some representation in the assembly, they never had that before.
It sounds mystifying, Qui-Gon said.
Obi-Wan wondered if anyone else noticed. That wasn't the same as agreeing with anything that had been said.
Well, that's why we brought you in, Qui-Gon, Avaros said. You're better at sizing up a situation than just about anybody. And we needed someone I knew I could trust. Not some play-it-safe type. Too many of those in the Order. You, though,
You can get to the bottom of this.
Mildly, Qui-Gon replied, I've been fooled a time or two.
But not often, and not for long.
Avaros's pride in Qui-Gon seemed almost as great and as paternal as his pride in Princess Fanry.
If I may.
Captain Darren waited for the Jedi to nod before he continued.
In my opinion, getting to the bottom of this is irrelevant compared with the importance of safeguarding the treaty ceremony. After that ceremony, we'll have all the time we need for investigations.
You might think we can protect the treaty and the princess without getting these answers, Minister Orth spat. But I do not. I only hope the new Jedi on our planet are able to come up with information faster than the one already here.
Protect the princess, Qui-Gon said. Is there any particular reason you think she would be in danger? Have there been attempts on her life? Fanry bit her lower lip and stared at the floor. Avaros cut in.
Nothing's happened to Fanry, not on my watch, and not on Darren's either. The man knows what he's about. But in the end, if the opposition's hell-bent on preventing the treaty from being signed, they could go after the one person with the power to sign it.
Although agreeing with Avaros was clearly difficult for Orth, she nodded.
And the upcoming events will expose her to greater danger. Public appearances, the Grand Hunt.
Perhaps the hunt might be postponed, Obi-Wan ventured. Every Pajali citizen in the room stared at him as though he'd just stripped off his trousers. He was blushing by the time Captain Darren responded.
The Grand Hunt is a traditional rite on Pajal. Every future monarch must prove themselves on the hunting grounds.
Avaros nodded.
It's like the ruler has to demonstrate they can provide for the planet.
Were Her Serene Highness not to hunt, Darren said, many Pajali would consider her coronation null and void. Her signing the treaty would then provoke a crisis far more serious than the opposition attacks.
There's no talking them out of it, guys, Avaros said. Believe me, I've tried.
Orth's eyes narrowed.
Perhaps you should have spent less time trying to destroy our traditions and more time finding the opposition.
Rael Avaros is as intelligent and dedicated a servant as a Serene Highness could wish, Qui-Gon said. He stood with his hands clasped together within the sleeves of his robe.
But whatever I can add through a new perspective is at the court's disposal.
As was often the case, Obi-Wan noted, Qui-Gon managed to sound very reassuring while actually saying very little. Later that night, after a sumptuous dinner and some courtly music, the Jedi had been taken to their guest suite. It was an ample space with bedrooms for them each, and a central room with tall windows that looked out onto the sea. Pygel's troublesome moon illuminated the water, revealing each wave, each curl of foam. Staring out at the tide, Obi-Wan ventured, Darren's the only one I feel entirely certain of.
That's usually the one who causes trouble.
Qui-Gon's smile was rueful.
So you don't feel entirely certain of Rael Avaros?
One thing Obi-Wan had learned from his master. When in doubt, answer a question with another question. Do you? Qui-Gon shrugged, using the gesture to free himself of his heavy robe.
I feel certain that he cares about Princess Fanry and is committed to the treaty. That's enough for now.
His master was being cryptic again. By now, Obi-Wan ought to have been used to it. He had been used to it. But the abrupt, unannounced end to his apprenticeship had scoured his feelings raw. He wanted to snap.
Just tell me what you're thinking. Can't you for once just...
How shall we begin? Obi-Wan said as coolly as he could manage. By visiting the moon.
Yes.
Qui-Gon kicked off his boots. Normally he left them in the center of the floor. It would be Obi-Wan's job to look after his things. Tonight, however, he collected them under one arm. Apparently the duties of a Padawan were slowly being taken away.
We'll fly to the moon tomorrow morning in a small short-run vessel,
preferably without any military escort. Less formal, and much better for snooping around. Despite his dark mood, Obi-Wan smiled slightly at the word snooping. Qui-Gon's tone made it clear how much he was looking forward to that. Still, he had to ask, "Do you seriously expect we'll be able to turn up the opposition just by flying around the moon? When we've never been there before and hardly know what we're looking for?" "Of course not." Qui-Gon freed his hair from its leather tie so that it fell loose to his shoulders. "That would be absurd." "Then why are we doing it?" "It's not the opposition we'll be searching for," Qui-Gon said. With that, he walked into his own bedroom. Cryptic. On purpose. Again. Obi-Wan had sometimes found this habit of his master's endearing. Tonight he didn't. But he couldn't help feeling curious about whatever Qui-Gon had planned. Chapter 12. Ships of enormous size and grandeur were put at the Jedi Knight's disposal, as well as the finest pilots of the Royal Starfleet. Qui-Gon refused them all, except for a small cruiser for Obi-Wan to pilot himself. Nothing larger was necessary. Obi-Wan would enjoy the experience, and besides, it was bad form to ask for too many favors at the beginning of a mission. Better to keep them in reserve. It was too early to test Rael's hospitality. "Not Rael," Qui-Gon told himself as Obi-Wan brought the cruiser out of Pygel's atmosphere. "The Lord Regent. That's who Rael Avaros is here." No wonder the Jedi Council had chosen Rael for this mission. Of all the people Qui-Gon had ever known, Rael Avaros was the least likely to be bowled over by riches, finery, and grandeur. 8 years in a palace and the man still dressed like a Drexelian shell digger. But the temptations of power were subtly different and far more dangerous. Had Rael fallen prey to those? Time would tell. "Lunar gravity taking effect," Obi-Wan said. Even as he spoke, Qui-Gon felt the faint pull on the cruiser drawing them in. "If you'd care to enlighten me as to our specific destination, this might be a good time to mention it." "Settle us into low orbit while I run some scans. When I find what I'm looking for, that's when we'll land." "When?" Obi-Wan gave him a curious look. "Not if?" "They're here," Qui-Gon murmured. "We just have to find them. Wherever they are." Obi-Wan opened his mouth, obviously to ask who they were, then closed it again. He was learning patience, Qui-Gon thought, discovering when to wait and let a mystery unfold for itself. That, or he was completely sick of dealing with a deliberately obtuse master. If that was the case, Qui-Gon couldn't blame him. Qui-Gon input a data card he'd requested from the Zerka ship the day before. A holo began to play, showing yesterday's plasma attack on the Soulcraft. He ignored the images, looking only at the scan findings at the bottom. "Are we reliving our past triumphs?" Obi-Wan said. He was joking now, trying to leaven the mood between them. "If so, I'd like to ask that the Hutt Palace on Teth be stricken from the record." Qui-Gon simply pointed at the findings as they scrolled along. "It's not our triumphs we're reliving." "Ah, there." The shadowy mystery ship appeared at the edge of the hollow, barely visible, firing to stop the plasma fire. Qui-Gon paused the hollow there to study the information beneath.
"We made some new friends yesterday. I suggest we look them up."
Obi-Wan frowned.
"Those are literally the only people on this moon we can safely assume aren't in the opposition."
"Agreed. That's one reason why they might be useful to us."
Qui-Gon pointed to one particular set of findings hovering at the lower edge of the hollow.
"This is another."
"That's a scanner blocking field. A rather powerful one, but small."
Obi-Wan spoke faster as he became more intrigued.
The field's limited to only one section of the ship, which isn't that big to begin with. Maybe it could stretch to cover the whole ship, though, as powerful as it is. Master, I didn't think small ships could project scanner-blocking fields, much less ones this strong.
We're dealing with someone rather ingenious.
Qui-Gon stripped out more frequencies from the cruiser's scanners, setting them to search for only the energy byproducts of this unusual blocking field.
And rather secretive, Obi-Wan pointed out. Are you sure you can get them to help us?
Qui-Gon smiled as the first faint hit came up on scans.
Let's find out.
Obi-Wan brought them in low, the cruiser skimming over thick forests of trees with distinctively knobby, gnarled trunks and branches. The terrain was uneven, rich with both cliffs and caverns. From their scans, it appeared the blocking field was at work within one of these caves.
A hiding place within a hiding place,
Obi-Wan thought as he and Qui-Gon strode out onto the moon.
I'm not sure these people will be eager to work with us.
But he followed Qui-Gon as they made their way toward the cave. It was important to stay attentive because the beauty of their surroundings could so easily lull him off his guard. Soft light filtered through the leaves far overhead. Sinuous vines twined around low shrubs and tree trunks, fruit gleaming in various shades of deep purple and a green so pale it was almost gold. Temperate breezes caressed his skin, tousled Qui-Gon's hair. Calling upon the Force here would be easy. Only a few moments of serenity would surely connect any Jedi to the abundant life of this moon.
Pygel carves its beauty out of stone, Obi-Wan thought. No such effort is required here.
The rambling terrain dipped lower, revealing rocky hillsides and the mouth of a cave nearly hidden by vines. Obi-Wan's sharp eyes picked out the torn leaves here, the odd winding there, which revealed that these vines had been broken recently, then tugged back into place from within. Qui-Gon gave him a look. Obi-Wan nodded, and they both took their lightsabers into their hands without activating them. Silently, they slipped through the vines and began walking into the cave. Sunlight became weaker as they went. Just when Obi-Wan thought they would soon be in complete darkness, he became aware of a dim glow ahead, which outlined a small ship of unknown make. They continued on, taking care to step as quietly on the gravelly surface as possible as new sounds became audible.
I cannot believe this, said a reedy human voice in a Coruscanti accent more precise than most. Every single one of them. This is outrageous.
The feminine voice that replied was more amused than angry.
You're going to be outraged that some rocks aren't doing what you want them to do?
More that they have the gall to be something other than what they pretended to be.
Obi-Wan made out a man's silhouette against the pale pinkish glow of hovering candle droids.
Never in the history of mineralogy has anyone been so betrayed.
The unknown woman laughed.
We'll lay a curse on them later, okay? For now, we should... Wait, do you hear that?
She had sharp ears. Obi-Wan wouldn't have detected anything yet at this point. For once, his reaction and Qui-Gon's were in perfect sync. Instantly, they both leapt forward and ignited their lightsabers. The two people inside the cave jumped back behind their ship, maybe going for weapons. And yet, what was that sparkling along the cave walls?
We mean you no harm, Qui-Gon said in his gentlest tone. We only want to ask a few questions.
Your questions be damned!
The man half showed himself from the edge of his ship, holding something long and black in one hand. The woman murmured,
Pax, they're Jedi.
They're not going to stop us, said the man, evidently named Pax.
They're going to turn around and back out of here if they know what's good for them.
And if not, well, I stand ready to fight.
Qui-Gon sighed.
Stand down.
Surrender?
Pack said. Give up before the battle's even begun!
Why would I do that? Because you're not holding a blaster in your hand. Only a shovel,
Qui-Gon said patiently.
Also, we have lightsabers.
A short pause followed before Pack said,
Your point is well taken. Allow me to congratulate you on your persuasive rhetoric. I can't believe you tried to bluff two Jedi Knights with a shovel.
The woman appeared, hands raised.
We surrender.
Surrender isn't necessary, Qui-Gon said.
But we need to talk.
Just want to talk. A likely story. Pax Marifer stood in his hold, arms crossed against his chest, glaring at the Jedi Knight and his student who dared interrupt his work. Granted, the work had turned out to be utterly fruitless, a waste of time, but that didn't give the Jedi the right to barge in waving their lightsabers about. Rahara, meanwhile, had introduced herself and was now chatting with these two like they were old friends.
Can you believe it?
She said, gesturing toward the brilliant orange crystal the tall fellow called Qui-Gon held in his hand.
It looks almost exactly like Kyber,
Qui-Gon said, turning the crystal back and forth.
The same heft, but even possesses some vibration with the Force. The differences are incredibly subtle. I see why you were fooled.
The young one, with the stupid haircut, whenever his name was, shook his head in disbelief.
Are you positive it's not Kyber? Not some new form, a different kind of crystallization?
This was too much to be borne.
Yes, I'm positive, Pax said, in a tone of voice he hoped would be described as withering.
He held out a scanner as evidence.
On the macro level, this stuff is identical to Kyber, but if you get down to the microscopic, they've got about as much in common as Coruscant and Ceran.
Apparently they're called colon crystals,
Rahara explained.
We just looked them up.
Turns out they're not unknown, just rare, even rarer than real Kyber. But they're no good in lightsabers, and so unusual there's not even a jewelry market for them.
Which means this whole trip is nothing but a wild Minoc chase for us.
She shrugged in a way that made her silky hair fall past one shoulder. Pax wondered if she was doing that on purpose, not remembering that the Jedi were supposedly celibate. Then he wondered if he was simply noticing Rahara's hair far too often.
Not only that,
Qui-Gon said, smiling at Rahara while continuing to pretend Pax was the least important individual in the room.
It also gave you an opportunity to save many lives.
Pax's eyes met Rahara's. It seemed to him that he ought to be indignant that her stunt had drawn exactly the attention they'd hoped to avoid. Instead, he saw the pain she tried so hard to hide so well most of the time. Quietly, she said,
There was no reason not to help. There was also no reason to run away afterward,
said the little one with bad hair, Avi whatever.
Why did you?
Pax was ready to leap in with one of many possible explanations, each in his opinion more deceptive than the last, but Rahara, after years of never speaking about it, instead simply held out her left hand.
Here, she said. That's why.
Visible on the back of her hand was the faint scar from the long-removed Zerk attack.
The scars won't heal, she said quietly. They treat the tags with a chemical that burns in ways Bacta can't fix. So you have to wear it forever. The proof that you're enslaved. Or were before you were freed.
Your last owner freed you,
Qui-Gon said. Rahara's expression grew steely.
I freed myself.
This was more than Pax could bear.
If you think for one instant that you can repatriate her to Zerka, let me make it very clear. That those lightsabers won't stop me from stopping you.
Qui-Gon held up one hand.
I've no intention of returning Ms. Wick to Zerka.
Something in his voice made Pax want to trust him, which was highly unusual, as he trusted nearly no one.
I only need your help.
I knew it. Pax was right.
Rahara hugged herself, a gesture of fear that had nothing to do with the pure rage in her voice.
You're going to make me do something, or else you'll turn me over to Zerka for...
Ms. Wick, Qui-Gon said again.
I repeat, I have no intention of returning you to Zerka, whether you cooperate or not. However, I'm more sympathetic to those who've escaped from slavery than I am to jewel thieves.
Who said we're jewel thieves?
Pax demanded.
You can't possibly prove such a thing.
Obi Bad Hair held up a datapad with their past inventory and sales records, which obviously hadn't been securely locked.
I think we can.
Rahara raised her eyes to the ceiling.
Pax, it's obvious what we're doing, so let's not waste time denying it.
Her gaze focused on Qui-Gon next.
What favor is it you want from us anyway?
Pax thought he was braced for any answer until Qui-Gon smiled easily and said,
I need you to help me find some terrorists.
Chapter 13. The Merricks, you say?
Qui-Gon took a seat in the ship, studying its inner workings, which were a unique patchwork of state-of-the-art tech and materials so old they might have predated the Republic.
An interesting namesake. Have you ever found any?
No, more's the pity,
said the wiry, wild-haired man called Pax Marifer. His resentment of the Jedi was clear, but not as powerful as his pride in his vessel. He ran a hand along one gleaming wall as he added,
Should we ever get our hands on some Merricks, oh, the upgrades I'll give her.
From his place near the scanner blocking field, Obi-Wan turned with a frown.
What's Merricks?
Probably the single rarest gemstone in the galaxy,
answered Rahara Wick, who was placing orange Kolen crystals in an analysis cylinder.
It's a kind of amber. Specifically, the fossilized amber of the white rocher trees of Kashyyyk, which have been extinct for millennia. Merricks appears cloudy and white until the light hits it just so.
Pax's face could actually look quite handsome when he was smiling. Qui-Gon suspected few people ever learned that.
Then it shines the most brilliant gold you can imagine.
Obi-Wan was as interested in jewels as the average 17-year-old Padawan, which was to say, not at all.
Why did you name your ship after a jewel you've never found? It's about hope, Rahara said.
Pax gave her a look. That wasn't the answer he would have given, Qui-Gon saw, but he didn't contradict her either.
The man has a soul, Qui-Gon thought, but he makes her carry it. Their ship is named after their ultimate goal, he said to Obi-Wan. It's an aspiration, a reminder to strive for great things. Something any Padawan should relate to, surely.
Obi-Wan looked to the floor as he nodded.
Perhaps you should explain to our new friends,
Pax snorted.
Hostages, more like.
This earned him an elbow in the ribs from Rahara.
Exactly what it is we need from the Merricks,
Obi-Wan concluded, which meant that his Padawan hadn't yet put it together himself. He'd been distracted these past several days, still wounded by Qui-Gon's failure to tell him about the Council. Even the innocent remark about having goals to aim for seemed to have stung. Qui-Gon wondered how things could have gotten so bad so quickly. The probable answer? They'd been that bad for a while, but he'd failed to see it. He'd been so busy judging Obi-Wan that he hadn't thoroughly judged himself. Without missing a beat, Qui-Gon replied,
We need to search this moon rather thoroughly,
without signaling to anyone that the search is underway. Using Pyjali's ships would attract attention and cause alarm. The Merricks, however, has been expertly fitted to avoid detection. The word expertly soothed Pax, as it had been intended to do. His tone was marginally less acidic as he asked,
In other words, you mean for us to chaperone you about this entire moon while you look for what, precisely?
Qui-Gon gestured upward toward the space between Pygel and the moon, where they'd first encountered each other.
For whomever sabotaged that soulcraft, nearly killing everyone in sight.
The opposition, right? I read that on the feeds.
Rahara leaned against the wall. The static of the scanner blocking field tugged strands of her hair out, almost as though she was standing in the wind.
Look at it this way, Pax. We're going to be flying around the moon as well protected as the princess herself with two Jedi by our side. And we're not going to jail. I'm not seeing a downside here.
The downside is I don't like it.
But I must admit, we're stuck.
Pax turned to Qui-Gon as though making a very great concession.
Very well.
Give us your desired search pattern and we can begin.
Qui-Gon held up a finger.
We'll begin tomorrow. Scouts might have seen our ship today and be on alert. If they have sources within the palace, they'll definitely know. Tomorrow morning, when you pick us up on Pygel, no one will be the wiser.
Pax rolled his eyes at the thought of having to get them from Pygel, but he raised no further objections. When he took himself off to the refresher, Qui-Gon mildly said,
"Interesting fellow, your partner."
You don't have to be tactful. Pax is a lot to take. But you have to understand where he comes from.
Rahara looked from Qui-Gon to Obi-Wan and back again.
When Pax was just a kid, 4 or 5 years old, he was on a ship on the border of wild space that got attacked by Delphidian pirates. He hid in an equipment hatch because he was still little enough to fit. Nobody else was. Which means every other sentient on board was killed, including his parents. Pax was left behind.
How terrible,
Obi-Wan said. Rahara nodded.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the main reason why he is the way he is. That has more to do with the fact that the ship went derelict. It wasn't found for a long time, and while it had tons of emergency rations and storage, it didn't have the fuel to get anywhere on its own. See, the only equipment the pirates left behind was a shipment of protocol droids. 3PO units, mostly. Those protocol droids raised Pax for the next 15 years, until the ship was finally rediscovered. And they taught him to behave exactly like they did.
Qui-Gon considered the 3PO units he'd known.
That must be challenging.
That's one word for it, she said with a laugh. But once you figure out how to deal with him, honestly, Pax is pretty great.
Obi-Wan gave Qui-Gon a look that clearly meant,
we'll have to take her word for it.
But they had more than Rahara Wick's word. Qui-Gon could feel the subtle flow of the Force around these two, the sense that they were people drawn to greater things. Despite Rahara's past traumas and Pax's bad attitude, there was very little darkness here.
Some people, he thought, are drawn to the light as surely as flowers that bend toward a sun.
Pax returned just as Qui-Gon began inputting an initial search grid. Rahara beckoned Pax to their equipment table and whispered very low,
"It looks like there are some whirlpool opals on this moon.
Semi-precious at best,"
sniffed Pax.
"Okay, maybe people don't pay that much for them, but they'll pay something. We might as well harvest what we can. Then this trip could be profitable for us. Or we'll at least break even."
"Assuming," Pax said,
"we're not blown to atoms."
"Yeah, that would help." Stifling a smile, Qui-Gon settled down to work. Although there were no specific references in the ancient royal charters, most of the Pygali courtiers believed that, for at least the last 100 coronations, Zerka Corporation had thrown a preliminary celebration for the heir to the throne. Not any of the rallies Zerka promoted, nor the orchestral events they sponsored, a small, private party. Something personal for the heir and the current sector supervisor. Which was why Fanry was spending her afternoon on a yacht with Merritt Call.
"Your Serene Highness," Call said,
settling into the cushioned repulsor chair next to Fanry's, near the prow of the ship.
When you take office, we'll have so many important matters to discuss, but today is only for pure...
What matters? Fanry asked innocently. Merritt called.